Well, it is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Please hold your calls. We have with us on the line right now Melody Cederstrom, and Melody certainly supports Radio Liberty, and we appreciate that. We enjoy having her on. We're going to be talking about what's happening financially to America. And, of course, some people really get tired of hearing about finances, but we at least hope that our listeners are beginning to make preparations because, as Paul Volcker said, we're skating on thin ice. Everything looks fine right at the present time, but beneath the surface, of course, there are very, very real problems. And the very real problem is we've adopted a totally unsound monetary system. The stability of a nation and a society is dependent upon the stability of their currency. And we do not have a stable currency here in the United States. We have a currency that is based upon purely printing money. It is based upon the fact that at least there is a perception that our dollar is stable. And although we are the mightiest military nation in the world today, we are also the world's largest debtor, and we cannot continue going along the path we're going. And in fact, what's going on today reminds me so much of what Cicero said back about 28 B.C., where Cicero, the Roman senator, said the budget should be balanced, public spending should be reduced, the arrogance of officials should be tempered, and certainly assistance to foreign lands should be curtailed, lest Rome go bankrupt. Well, of course, they assassinated Cicero. They didn't follow his advice, and Rome went bankrupt. And soon the once mighty Roman Republic had become a dictatorship. They called it the Roman Empire. And that Roman Empire lasted till 476 A.D. And then exactly 1,300 years later, why a new nation was born in 1776, on July 4th, 1776. And that was the United States. And one of the first great mistakes we made was to form a central bank that was controlled by the Europeans, and of course directed here by Alexander Hamilton, that allowed a ruling aristocracy to control the wealth of our nation, enrich themselves, and impoverish the people. And, of course, the first bank of the United States ended in 1811, and then the Second Bank of the United States was formed in 1815, and that lasted until about 1836, when it went down in flames as well. And each time the banking system contracted, the people were impoverished, and, well, we're already beginning to see the signs of contracting of a monetary system, as we see what's going on as far as the raising of the interest rates, not only in the United States, but throughout the world. The whole world's on a fiat money system, and they either have to elevate the interest rates, contract the money supply, or the whole world will go into financial crisis. And, well, I don't think that's too far away. All we need is just one major incident to bring the whole house of cards down. And when we get back, why, we'll be talking to our good friend Melody Cederstrom about what's happening financially, and the hope that at least some of our listeners are preparing themselves for the very difficult times that I believe lie ahead. Hi, Melody. How are you doing tonight?
Just fine, Dr. Stan, and yourself, and thank you for having me on the show.
Well, it's always good to have you there, and it's these are sort of exciting times. Gold goes down, gold goes up. In fact, it really was skyrocketing today.
Yeah, we had a great day in gold today. In fact, the COMEX futures popped to a five-week high today. It was up earlier this morning, and then we had the news of the bombing over in India, which pushed it up about another $10, $11, $12.
Where did it close today?
It closed at 642.40.
Okay.
Yeah, it was up $17.50 on the New York exchange. So we had a good day, but it was coming along on its own. We entered a new quarter the 1st of July, so I think we saw a lot of funds being funneled into the gold market. And we had a major correction. It was something that was needed. It was healthy. And it was a correction. You could call it a correction. You could call it people taking profits. I believe there was manipulation involved because the powers to be, that they just, you know, they don't like to see gold get out of control. And when we saw gold approaching $730, that's exactly what they were doing. They were losing control of the price of gold. So I believe they started with the manipulation, and I believe you had the profit takers and so forth, and it was a lot. It was gold on the paper side, but physical buying is, you know, we still have major governments out there that are looking to continue to add to their reserves. That hasn't changed, but they have to play a very, they have to balance it. They have to, they're playing a balancing act. I mean, they know they have all these dollars, and they want to replace a lot of those dollars with gold, but they can't do it too fast because even having the dollar fall at an extreme pace would not be beneficial to them. So it's a balancing act. This whole world is being micromanaged on a, you know, hour-to-hour basis pretty much. And you talked about the budget, and it was funny because we had the administration today touting about the great drop in the budget deficit, and you know what, it's just another, it's not as impressive as what they make it out to be. Things are still moving along. Things aren't improving. Things are, the fundamentals for the rise in gold is still very, very strong. And we saw a lot of push in gold, rising it from the demand in foreign countries. And what's amazing is that...
Hold that thought right there, Melody. We want to bring our stations back on board here.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were just talking to Melody, and she's saying that certainly gold really ran up very, very strongly today, and then, of course, came the bombing in India, and it ran it up another $10 to close today over in the 640, 642 range. And this is really a phenomenal upside push over the last couple of days. And then, of course, silver was up strong, platinum was up strong. And it wasn't all simply the bombing. The bombing, I'm sure, played a part because it reflects uncertainty. And when we see uncertainty, you know, in the world, people look at something other than the fiat money system for stability. They want something that is tangible. And, of course, that's why gold and silver are going up today, because people throughout the world, especially in other countries, are increasingly aware of the fact that we have a very friable, a very, very fragile monetary system. And if it were simply that America would be isolated, why, they, our central bankers could continue manipulating everything, but some of the other countries don't want to play the game. Some of the other countries want to protect their currencies. You know, and they don't aren't as concerned about what happens to America as they are concerned about themselves. The Chinese are like that. Oh, how selfish they are. They want a stable currency for China. The Russians, increasingly, and people do not realize that Russia, which has been a basket case for so long, now is coming forward to become a very, very strong country economically. They're paying off all of their debt. We're not paying off our debt, but the Russians are paying off their debt. They're the second largest oil and natural gas producer in the world today, which gives them tremendous clout. I mean, they're second to Saudi Arabia. They are actually putting out more oil and gas than Iran or Iraq or any of the Middle East countries other than Saudi Arabia. So, I mean, everything is changing, and certainly many of the Middle Eastern countries are beginning to lose their confidence in America, especially as they see America not even able to win a war in Iraq, not able to win the war in Afghanistan. course, they don't understand we're not really trying to win the war, and it's all a scam. But what it is doing, of course, is to discredit America in their eyes, and they're beginning to look for their own stability, and they're either buying up products in America, as Dubai is, coming in here and trying to buy up whatever they can lay their hands on. And believe me, people throughout the world who have a lot of dollars are buying up America. In fact, on our financial tsunami syllabus, we have, I don't know, probably 10 pages of American major corporations that have been bought up by foreign concerns and foreigners, because they want to put their money in something stable, and they certainly don't want it in dollars. So where do we go next, Melody?
Well, you're right. I believe there's a battle going on. I believe, I mean, you can call it whatever you want, but the world powers know the dollar will be losing its reserve currency. So I think, yeah, Russia, I mean, a lot of what these countries are doing, like Russia, everything they're doing is good. I mean, they're doing great things for their countries. And when you look at what the United States is doing, we're just really tumbling down. We're losing our power. We're losing our strength. And the other countries are seeing us as becoming weak. You have these situations that are arising with, you know, North Korea, and they're touting their muscles, and it's what do we say? We, you know, we ask China to go in there and talk to them, and there's a lot of things. I believe there is a battle going on, and you have these major countries that naturally would want to replace the U.S. dollar with their currency, and I think you're seeing a lot with that with Russia, and so there's going to be a battle between the dollar, the euro, the ruble, and so it's everyone knows the dollar is going to fail, and the dollar will go down, and it will be replaced. And people with wealth, they understand this, and they are looking to protect their wealth. They are looking to protect their purchasing power, and they know the only way to do that is by buying gold. And so it's a great time to get in there to purchase gold. We've seen that. Gold is no longer the commodity that everyone said that it was over these past years. It is a monetary metal. It always will be a monetary metal. And it's the only metal out there. It's no longer. Central banks are not buying commodities like soybeans or wheat or corn. They're buying gold. Gold is pretty much, you know, the no-brainer investment of the next couple of years. There's basically no downside risk to gold. And I know the listeners, and I know my listeners on my show, you know, sometimes they're, yeah, we know. But yet sometimes, Dr. Stan, I don't think people really do understand how important and why the finances should be so important in their everyday life, and why they need to take control and make major decisions and perhaps rearrange some of their investment portfolios so they can be able to weather the storm that is approaching with the dollar in our economy.
I think it was so interesting. You pointed out this last week that the Bush administration has said, gee, things are really so great. We're taking in so much more money, and the government is taking in so much more money because of our tax cuts, and because, of course, that's producing a lot of profits. And that is a half-truth. I mean, the tax cuts are great. I'm all in favor of the tax cuts. But you can't cut taxes and increasing spending. You cut taxes, you're going to get more money in. But if you increase spending, why, of course, you're not going to get more money in. You're going to go down the tube. So the projected deficit for this year was $330 billion. They cut it down, and now I think it's about $291 billion. But the trouble is, they lie. They do not mention the off-budget items. They talk about the budget, but they don't mention the off-budget items, which are certainly at least $100 billion or more. And then, of course, there's another couple of hundred to about $250 billion they're stealing from Social Security and Medicare. In other words, the money comes in, should go into the Social Security fund, but it doesn't. They put an IOU, and they immediately spend that money. So basically, the real budget deficit for this year is 291 plus about 250 plus another 100, and so that gets us up pretty well towards about $600 billion. And why isn't the media, why isn't anybody telling the American people that they're simply lying to us?
Well, this is, remember when he was, you know, it's a fuzzy math that he always talked about, And no matter how you look at it, the rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer, and the middle class, they're getting squeezed. And we do not have a strong economy, and they just continue to lie. And but as long as you have the mainstream media backing pretty much everything they say, and perhaps except for a select few, they need to do it. And what I don't understand is people who are invested in the markets, we have the baby boomers that will be retiring very shortly. And they will not be allowed to walk away with all their funds that they have. Just like we've talked so many times on the show about GM, eliminating their pension funds. And it was all by design. Well, so is the markets. The markets are manipulated, they're controlled, and it's only the wealthy that are making the money. And the American people have pretty much financed the New World Order through Wall Street. And if people think they're going to be walking away with their little pension plans and with their little IRAs and their 401k plans, they're going to be sadly mistaken. They will not allow them to walk away, and they do need to at least offset some of their investments with something that will protect them against when we have the Dow falling. And I was just talking to someone earlier, you know, the Dow, the NASDAQ is more of a barometer of the American people. Most people are in the NASDAQ. The Dow, I mean, there's only one original component that's been in the Dow, and that's GE. Every time a company started falling in their revenues, they replace it. You know, they'll do anything to keep that Dow up because the American people think that's the barometer for America, but it isn't. You know, as long as they see that Dow up there, they fall into a complacency, and they accept the lies. Because as long as that Dow's up there, well, maybe those lies aren't that bad. Maybe it's just a little white fib, you know, that it won't impact them. And maybe they're buying time before something happens. And we're running out of time. And I don't like to create any type of panic or fear or anything like that, but I just don't believe people get it. As smart as your listeners are and my listeners are, I think sometimes they think they've postponed it for so long, and every time gold continues to move up, they have they're able to knock it down, and they will not be able to continue to do that. Gold will run its course; it will catch up with its inflation rate, and I mean, all we need is something from left field, a catalyst, and it will propel it to all levels. And what's going to happen? Is it's not going to go up gradually. I believe when something happens, when we have that catalyst, it's going to happen. It's going to happen quick. And if people think that they'll be able to buy gold, I believe that the product will disappear so quick that even when the general populace is ready to get in, they're going to be paying high prices because you will not have an equal buy and sell ratio. Because when you have a falling dollar, and the only thing to buy is gold, what are you going to buy? What are you going to buy with your dollars?
Well, I think that most people really can't imagine that happening, Melody, because they haven't studied history. They haven't seen what's happened in Russia here in the 1990s and haven't in Argentina about probably, 4 or 5 years ago, when they simply devalued the value of their currency by 3/4 overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And what most people really find is so difficult to believe is that the people who are really running things here in America, and I'm talking about the people who are controlling our central banking system, are shifting the leadership of the world to other countries. One of the major motor producers in Brazil today is Ford Motor Company. The major motor producer in China is GM, and of course in Korea they're not far behind. All of our major factories are moving overseas. And, of course, the Japanese factories are moving over here, so they won't have to be burdened, or, of course, with expensive pension funds. So we're seeing the total shifting of the manufacturing base of the United States intentionally out of the United States, this country, subsidized and encouraged by our own government. Well, our guest, of course, is Melody Cederstrom, so I think it's really fascinating as we see this thing unfold. It's sort of like, how well you like with mixed emotions, that old story. mixed emotions is when you see your new Cadillac going over the cliff with your mother-in-law inside, and you don't know whether to laugh or cry. Well, of course, I've always loved my mother-in-law, so at least until she passed away. But be that as it may, you know, I think that people have to understand that we are seeing the demise of the American financial system. That didn't have to happen. It could have been corrected. It could have been corrected long ago, but of course, Alan Greenspan did everything wrong during his 18-year period. And he encouraged the derivative market. He encouraged the carry trade. He encouraged the hedge funds. He refused to stop the housing bubble and the stock market bubble. And of course, they encouraged this massive expansing of credit, unparalleled throughout all history, and it's all an illusion. But, of course, you know, as long as people will accept the dollars, that's fine. But what happens when people suddenly realize that there is nothing behind the currency, and it is all an illusion? At that point, why, as other countries will no longer take our currency, as the massive reserves of American dollars being held in central banks throughout the world are returned to the United States, you know, then what happens?
We're going to have a very high price in gold. But you're right. And you know what? When people lose faith in the currency, you know, you're going to have the foreign governments lose faith in it first. And, you know, it will snowball and it will happen overnight. And most people don't understand. They don't think it will happen. And they think they'll have time. They buy time. And you're right, it is mixed emotions. When gold was approaching 730, you know, I get, you know, as happy as I am to see it up there, I get this unsettled feeling that I know things are falling apart. And and as gold continues to rise, and when we see it at, I can't imagine what will be happening in this country when we have gold at $15,000 and $2,000.
Well, I think, of course, this will concomitant with the other things that are going on. Right now, of course, they are raising the interest rates to fight inflation. Now, that's how you fight inflation. You raise the interest rates, and, of course, you begin to dry up the money supply, so there's not an excess of money around. The problem is that at the same time they're raising the interest rates to fight inflation, they are increasing the credit supply massively. And, of course, you can either create money or you can create credit. It doesn't really matter. It's all the same thing. And during the first 3 months of this year, they increased the debt of our country by $1 trillion. So, and since the total debt is about $40 trillion, that's the total amount of debt, they're increasing the debt, you know, or the paper credit, you know, at the rate of about 10 or 11% a year. How long does it take before you completely wipe out the value of the dollar doing that? So on one hand, they're trying to put the fire out. On the other hand, they're pouring gasoline on the fire. They know what they're doing. They've discontinued printing the M3 because they do not dare let the American people know that they're planning on destroying our economy. But what better way to destroy a nation than to destroy a people than to, of course, make the people penniless? Of course, to move towards a two-class society, not a three-class society with a very rich middle class and a poor small number of people, but most people actually living in poverty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course our guest is Melody Cederstrom. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you'd like to give us a call, our number is 1-800-259-5791. But I was just commenting off the air that I really believe that the people who are in charge, and believe me, of course, the economy is controlled by the Federal Reserve Bank, by the central bankers. George Bush is simply a figurehead for the power elite. He always has been. And, of course, he is controlled by a man named Dick Cheney, who makes all of his decisions and certainly goes over his speeches. And if you don't believe that, watch Saturday Night Live. You'll find a lot more truth on Saturday Night Live, you know, in some of their skits than you'll find on CBS, ABC, and NBC News. But, of course, Dick Cheney works for the Trilateral Commission, and it's the Trilateral Commission that has controlled our central bank, at least going back to the late 1970s when Paul Volcker took control of the reins of power, and then followed by Alan Greenspan, and both of them came from the Trilateral Commission. And their goal is to change us from a three strata society: the wealthy, a large middle class, and of course a very small poor class, to a two-class society with a very small group of very wealthy people, and then of course a great mass of people who are impoverished, exactly as the government that we installed in Mexico has done. In Mexico you have many billionaires, a very small middle class, and so many people impoverished looking for an opportunity to come to America, the land of opportunity. And the question is, how long will America be the land of opportunity if we allow these scoundrels to continue to control our economy? So where do you think that we're going next, Melody?
Well, I don't know. I think there's a lot of things brewing. We have the G8 meeting this weekend in St. Petersburg, and it's interesting that at the same time they're having that, Iran is to come to their... they have a deadline, whether they're going to accept the United States offer to them, which I can't imagine that they will. They said they would do it August, so I don't know why they would speed it up. It's interesting that they wanted an answer at the same time they were having the G8 meeting over in Russia. So I think there's a lot of things brewing, and it just seems like everything seems to be very quiet. I almost feel like it's the quiet before the storm. And because there's the Mideast is just, I hate to keep going back to the Mideast, but if something's going to come out of the blue, it'll be from there. And so I think we have earnings seasons that started this week, and there have been a pretty weak on the earnings. And usually they'll bring out the ones that are good in the beginning. And I don't think anyone can predict the time or know what's going to happen. What we do know is just what we mentioned all during this show, is we have a weak economy, and no matter the lies that the administration prints and touts on all the financial shows and news shows on the television, they're all lies. And they distort the truth, they distort the numbers, and some they just come out and flat. And it's really sad when you mention that you can get more truth on Saturday Night Live. I mean, that's pretty sad for this country. The dollar, they have to keep it around that 85 level. When we saw gold at 730, it was down around 83, and once it breaks 80, there's no levels below it to stop it. So they're working very hard to keep the illusion that the dollar is strong. But when you combine all the fundamentals and the shape that this country is in, the jobs, people can't find jobs, they have to accept low wages, the continuing people coming across the border. I mean, this country's a mess. There isn't anything positive about it. That's the sad. There's not one positive thing that is going on to see any changes to the good.
Well, do you think they're going to continue raising the interest rates? They were told now, of course, they've raised interest rate to 5.25%. They're going to go to 5.5%. But then, of course, everybody says, well, they're probably going to stop at 5.5%. Yeah. And yet, of course, they can't stop at 5.5%.
No.
They've got to begin to dry up the supply of money. If they have any hope of maintaining any sort of a stabilized system, they say they're going to stop at 5.5%. But what happens if they go to 5.75% or 6% or 6.5%, or, as Paul Volcker eventually was forced to do, went to 19% interest to try, actually went to 22% interest or 21% interest to try to stop the destruction of the dollar back in 1980. And believe me, the situation in 1980 was nowhere near as bad as it is today. We had, you know, relatively little debt compared to that. In 1980, we have a national debt of $1 trillion. Today, of course, it's over almost $8.4 trillion and rising every day. We'll be back in just a moment with Melody, and welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly I was, just a week ago today, I was in a place called Brighton, Colorado. And it's a suburb. It's north of Denver, Colorado. I don't know, maybe 10 miles, 15 miles. And you have never seen so many new houses going up. And these are not small houses. These are beautiful big houses. And row after row after row of these beautiful big houses. And they're all empty because nobody's there to buy them. And, you know, one of these days, of course, the prices are going to have to start coming down, or they're going to be foreclosed on by the bank. And I think we're going to see this increasingly throughout the country. It hasn't started yet. A few places, the prices are beginning to come down. But, you know, it's only a matter of time as they continue contracting the money supply. And they are beginning to contract the money supply, not only here in the United States, but in Japan and all throughout the world. And when they contract the money supply, what then happens? Why, of course, people can't borrow money. It becomes increasingly difficult to obtain financing for expanding your business. And this is what happens at the end of an economic monetary cycle, just before the crash comes. Do you have that feeling that we are heading towards this major economic contraction?
Absolutely, and you talk about new homes, but there are parts in this country, and we're State College, Pennsylvania, and Central PA, where they house the University of Pennsylvania, Penn State. The real estate market, it's amazing the prices that you're still asking on homes. The realtors haven't budged off their prices. You are beginning to see homes on the market a little bit longer, but yet I have customers in Indiana who were gone for... They moved out of the country and they came back to Indiana. Thank you. For after 11 months, and they couldn't believe the change in their neighborhood, to where they saw homes that were boarded up, to where the foreclosures are abound, because you had Chrysler in there that moved their factory over to China. So you had all these people that bought new homes. And now they didn't have jobs, and perhaps, yes, they were overfinanced, and, you know, they had all the toys, they had the boats, the cars, and the new homes, and perhaps they shouldn't have financed everything, but now these homes are on the market at a lot lower price. She told me you could buy, three, four-year-old brick homes, 2,000 square foot homes for $20,000, $30,000, and she said the neighborhoods were not...
Hold that thought. We'll be back with Melody in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Melody Cedarstrom, and our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And it is my contention that they are going to, of course, continue raising the interest rates to try, of course, to bring these things under control, but they've let it go way too long. Not only that, but they're going to contract the money supply, which they are doing here, at least in other countries, and they're going to have to do here in the United States, and it's getting increasingly difficult, to get a cheap loan. Now, of course, you can still get your loans, but you're going to have to pay more for them. And, of course, there are all these adjustable rate loans that Alan Greenspan was encouraging people to take out. And when those expire and they're going to have to pay a regular rate, of course, they will not determine what their interest rate will be. It will be determined by the bankers, and it will be 7 or 8 or 9%. And most people are not going to be able to afford to pay that, especially when their salary is not going to be going up. Well, Melody, I'd like you to get your address and your telephone number and your website out so people would know how to get in touch with you and get your thoughts on what's going on personally.
If anyone has any questions or you'd like to start a portfolio in gold, silver, platinum, or palladium, you can call me at 1-800-375-4188. And again, that is 1-800-375-4188. And if you'd like to go to the website, you can go to, it's a long one, discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. A lot of people who call for information packets, if you have access to the computer and you go to the website, pretty much what I mail out is from the website. We don't do the glossy brochures. We try to keep our overhead low to pass those savings on to you. What a concept. But we always try to do everything so we can provide you with great prices, great service. And again, the website is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. And if you have questions on other investments and so forth, I can always recommend someone, and I can either give you the information or talk to you about it, because there's so much misinformation out there, and it just amazes me the amount of misinformation. And sometimes the information is difficult to understand. Sometimes listeners have a tendency to maybe hear something that isn't exactly what was said, or, you know, because I know a lot of the listeners listen to shortwave and we have the information in and out. So if you ever have any questions, you can always call me at 800-375-4188.
All right, fine. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment about what's happening financially, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But I think we're entering into one of the most difficult times in our nation's history. And I think what is about to happen will far exceed what happened during the 1930s, of course, when we had this terrible, terrible depression. People say that it couldn't happen again, and I would like to suggest that it very well could happen again, and because I believe that they intend for it to happen. What happened in the 1930s was done intentionally by the Federal Reserve System, by the Central Bank of the United States. It was done maliciously, and you read the writings of Congressman McFadden, who at that time was the chairman of the House Banking Commission. He will tell you that our central bank, our Federal Reserve Bank, who was supposed to maintain stability in this country, could not get any money into our economy. They were contracting our money supply, and they were sending money to Joseph Stalin and Adolf Hitler. Why would they be doing something that stupid? Why, they were creating the best enemies money could buy. So, of course, when you have enemies, then you've got to increase the power of the government, and you've got to build a massive military machine, which, of course, we have the legacy of today, where America spends more money on its military than the next 20 nations in the world put together. We spent half of all the money spent for militaries all throughout the world is spent by our government. And who are we protecting ourselves against? Oh, the wicked Osama bin Laden, who, why, we just closed down the department over there at the CIA that was tracking him. But, of course, our president promised to get Osama bin Laden dead or alive. He just didn't tell when he was going to try to get him dead or alive, because he sure avoided every opportunity to capture him through the years. Just as, of course, the Clinton administration repeatedly refused to try to capture Osama bin Laden, despite the fact they had definite evidence he was involved in so many attacks that had killed so many American taken so many American lives. And we're still not trying to get Osama bin Laden. He is, of course, a very convenient enemy to rally the people behind the government. So we'll pay our taxes and maintain the military that is being used not only to dominate the world, but is increasingly collecting dossiers on every American citizen. Under the DARPA, then they had, of course, a number of various organizations. They don't want the American people to know. The American military is collecting dossiers on American citizens and working in conjunction with the other 13 intelligence agencies in this country. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we have 13 intelligence agencies, many of which are keeping tabs on American citizens. But we're, of course, no longer going to really try to get Osama bin Laden, although we think he's just not as important as he used to be. Despite the fact they assure us that he was responsible for killing 3,000 Americans, we're not going to try to get him. We're closing down the office that was supposed to get him. And we have to ask ourselves, why? Is anything the way we've been told, or is everything an illusion? Sort of like the value of paper currency. And, of course, the real currency that has held its value down through the ages has been gold. Well, Melody, what sort of response are you getting from your, certainly the people who are calling you? Are they getting into gold and silver now, or are they sort of standing and waiting to see what's going to happen again?
I think a lot of them are waiting to see what's going to happen, and it just always amazes me that, you know, they can't pick up the phone fast enough when it's $730, but when you have a little bit of a pullback and we see gold rise again, you know, they wait. But, I mean, that's human nature, I guess. And but when we saw the $17 rise, and actually the whole month of July we've seen gold over $600, that certainly has picked up more interest and more buying over that $600 mark. So I believe that will tell us pretty much that we've hit a bottom, and I'd like to see it stay around the 620 to 630 mark for a little bit. I'd like to build a little bit better base here, but I won't complain if it continues to rise. But we will see pullbacks along the way, but people have to understand. And it's interesting, when you compare gold to paper stocks, and if someone holds a stock and it fluctuates, they don't react in the same manner in which they do with gold. I don't know why, but you know, with their paper stocks, they get their quarterly statements, and most of them don't even look at it. But when it comes to the gold buyers, they know when it's up and down, and when it corrects, they have a tendency to wait to see what happens. Instead, they should be buying, because it's a great buying opportunity at that point in time. You can never have too much gold.
Well, what about palladium? I noticed you mentioned that people want to get into palladium. Do you think that's a good play at the present time?
I think you could see palladium rise a little bit. I think if someone wants to speculate a little bit in the palladium market, but we have to remember that both palladium and platinum, they're industrial metals. They're widely used in catalytic converters and automobiles. And there was reason to believe that palladium would replace platinum, as we see the price in platinum rise so much. And we saw palladium rise to a little over 400 when gold was at 730. So it pulled back quite a bit also. So I think if someone wants to invest a little bit in palladium, I think it would be fine as, you know, just as a speculative. It's difficult to gauge, because I think as the world economy slows, there's going to be less and less people buying vehicles. And when you have an item is that's mainly used for catalytic converters in vehicles, you would think that that price would also slack off. So I think you might see palladium, you know, maybe 500, might tap out at 600, but I'm not sure what it'll do much before that. We have to remember, when palladium went to 1,000, it was a play by Ford Motor Company. So for it to hit 1,000 again, I'm not quite sure we'll make it there unless we have another automobile company do the same thing.
Well, remember, what did Ford Motor Company do at that time? I don't remember that.
They took a lot of it off the market as they were going to use it, and platinum was rising significantly. And so they just took a lot of it off the market, and price went up high, and then they started putting it back in the market, and we actually had palladium rise to $1,000, and then it came back. So I'm not sure you'll see palladium at $1,000 again, but it's volatile, and just like silver is. Silver is a volatile metal. Palladium's a volatile metal, and your central banks are not buying palladium. They're buying gold. So if you want to be safe, and you want to keep what you have, you still have to be heavy in gold. But palladium, for a little bit of a play, for a little bit of the diversification, I think it's fine.
Well, now, of course, we hear a lot about the central banks continuing to sell gold. I mean, the central banks may sell 5,000 tons of gold. Who's buying 5,000 tons of gold?
Well, they don't release that information, but I'll guarantee it's other governments and other central banks. And because that's what they want, that's what they buy, they understand. They sell 500 tons, and, you know, they don't release the information on who buys it.
And do you ever have a feeling when you get this announcement, oh, the German central bank is selling 500 tons of gold, but, of course, we're not going to tell you who's buying it, that it's all a matter of perception? everything is a matter of perception. Everything is illusion and delusion. Yeah. After all, if the central banks are selling gold, they can't think it has any real value. But what are they getting in return for it? And then who's buying it? And I suspect this is all a matter of creating this picture in our minds that gold is of no value, that we better stick with their illusionary paper money system. And yet, the paper money system, of course, has nothing at all behind it other than our faith and confidence in the central banks.
And you have to know how important gold is if they go to such extremes to create that illusion for gold. I mean, they know how valuable it is. They know how important it is. When they took it off the, when they took it out of the hands of the American people in 1933, there was $10,000 fines. Today, $10,000 in today's market would be, what, $1 million? I mean, those are significant fines. 10 years in jail if you caught owning gold. I mean, they didn't want people to have it. So they made it a true contraband. And so you have to see the value of gold. Gold is very much a big player in the overall scenario of what's happening around the world. Along with the money and the currencies and who's going to rule. And people can't take it as it's very serious. And that's how you happen. That's why it's so important that you get it in, that the listeners get it in their portfolios.
Well, I certainly agree with you. I think it's vitally important that people understand that we're living in very, very uncertain times. They prepare themselves. They've got to get out of debt. If you're in debt, get out of debt by whatever means you can, or at least get into the situation where you've got the smallest payments that you possibly have to make, and try to lock in a low interest rate, because the interest will kill you. At one time, both the Christian Church and the Jewish Church said that the Jewish faith said that usury was wrong. The Muslims still do. They will not allow usury. What we have in America is usury, and of course they used to say, well, 3 or 4% isn't so bad, paying interest on money you borrow. Look and see what many of your credit card companies are doing now. They are simply using the use system of usury to impoverish the people. And really what bothers me, and so many of our college students, they were enticed into borrowing money for their education because you could get a loan as a college student for 3% interest. 3% interest, that was almost like giving you the money, and you paid it back when you got around to it. And now many of those loans are up to 6.5% or 7%. And believe me, that runs up in a hurry, and you will no longer go bankrupt. Why do you think they changed the bankruptcy laws here about a year and a half ago? Because they knew it was going to happen. They know exactly what they're doing and where we're headed, and you're going to see an awful lot of young people, lending, getting out of college. They're not going to be able to get jobs. Well, they'll probably be able to get jobs if they go in the Army. And they'll get a $20,000 bonus, and they get $20,000 or $30,000 for the college education. That's how you're going to force young people to go into a military, to go overseas to fight wars. They're never to win, just to fight wars. They're a very, very convenient diversion, and as a young man go overseas to fight for freedom, at least they think they are, why we lose our freedom here at home. Well, our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you have a question for Melody, any comment? We hope many of you out there are making your preparations for the very, very real economic problems that lie ahead, as they will continue tightening interest rates and tightening money. And they're not going to tell you what they're going to do, but they're going to have to, as the only hope of preserving anything at all here in the United States. Japan is contracting the money supply, taking their money out there, beginning to raise their interest rates in Japan. They have been the greatest source of increase in the monetary supply in the world. They've been lending money out at 0% interest. And of course, supposedly it was going to be to encourage their own economy. And instead of much of that money was taken to places like Iceland and New Zealand and South Africa and other countries where it stimulated their economies. You can have a very, very prosperous economy when you get a lot of money. But if that money has no value at all, sooner or later things begin to equalize, and of course, everybody, most people, end up losing. A few people end up with all the property and the things of value, and everybody else is impoverished. What are your parting thoughts for us, Melody?
Well, my only thoughts are people really do need to take a look at their finances, and you're absolutely right. People need to get out of debt. Pay down your credit cards the best you can. Get them off. Don't use them. Don't get enticed into their low interest rates, only for them to raise it to 15-21%, you know, after a couple of months. And I've been hearing a lot about that, where people are now getting new bills and their payments are went from, you know, $50 to $400, you know, over a month's time. So they're not going to mess around. They're going to want their money, and they'll do whatever they need to do.
Let's get your telephone number off one more time.
1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188.
All right, I guess now that you see this room, we'll be back in just a moment. Well, Melody, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I'd like to give my number again, 800-375-4188. And if you're looking to start a portfolio, purchasing gold is not as complicated as, but people get very confused because they hear conflicting information. There's different products out there, and there's not one coin that fits all. And when someone comes to me, I look at where their investments are, what they're looking to invest, and what coin will best suit their needs, not what I will make the most commission off of, because that's the only way your portfolio will perform to the greatest. You get the listeners and my customers, they get to become part of their, they become involved in making their portfolios in gold and silver. I give the guidelines, I explain what the different coins will do, how they're priced, how they perform, and we come together with a great portfolio. Diversification is the key, and you have to start with a base portfolio. Just like when you build a home, you need your foundation, and then you can begin to speculate. You can add different coins. Different coins perform differently than others, and not always getting the least expensive coin is always the best. And, of course, getting the most expensive coin is not always the best way to go. So people are different. Budgets are different. Investment objectives are different. And I'm probably about the only one who truly looks at portfolios that way, the gold and silver portfolio. So if I can be of assistance, you can call me at 1-800-375-4188. I believe prices will continue to rise, and I do believe in that catalyst comes, whatever it may be, gold will spike, product will disappear, and we saw product disappear just prior to Y2K, and you can't compare that to anything that is happening in today's world. So it was just a sign that product will disappear very quickly. And so it's the best to get it now while it's affordable. And
well, I think we live in very uncertain times. And I think at uncertain times, you really want to be able to have something that will give you an element of security. I personally believe that we are involved in a spiritual battle, and you better be in good terms with the Lord.
Absolutely.
And you, none of these things may do us any good, but we would be foolish not to make all of the plans we possibly can for ourselves and for our family, and yes, even for our neighbors, because I think that we're going to have to make preparations. I think difficult times lie ahead. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I was just telling Melody that I really believe that terrible times lie ahead, and whether it's going to be an epidemic of some sort, and you have to know that the Centers for Disease Control has a special a high-security lab where they're actually experimenting with the H5N1 virus to see how they can make it as deadly as possible. And in Wisconsin, they've made a virus that's something like 30,000 times more deadly than the virus of 1918. Now, why would you do something like that? Remember, things can get out of the laboratories. You remember the anthrax that hit America immediately after 9/11? And do you remember, of course, that I eventually determined that it came from a military laboratory, and that they've never found out who let that anthrax out that killed a number of people, perhaps six or eight people. What is really most interesting is that on the very evening of September 11th, Dick Cheney and the entire White House staff, and I think probably the president, all started on Cipro, which is a antibiotic, a potentially dangerous antibiotic, because it weakens your tendons, it attacks, of course, your whole immune system, but it's very good against anthrax, and if there's going to be an epidemic, why, you want to be on Cipro beforehand. So why did they start that on September 11th? They had to know, or they had to suspect, there was going to be an anthrax attack, but nobody's ever asked how Dick Cheney and the White House staff knew there was going to be an anthrax attack, and nobody in Congress did. And nobody in the country did. And we know this came from a military laboratory, and nobody ever asked the question, who released the anthrax that was used to get the Patriot Act through? Would anybody be that crass or indifferent to human suffering and human death? And now they're working. Of course, we know that they began working on a new disease back in 1969 that would destroy the immune system, very much like AIDS does, and they were given $10 million. And we have the testimony of Dr. Donald MacArthur, who talks about, some people say we shouldn't do this because it would be another mass form of killing, and AIDS has already killed in America 500,000 and 20 to 30 million throughout the world, and how many will die, we don't know. But you'll be pleased to know, and we have the articles from UPI and certainly from the Washington Times, that they actually have worked with this virus and now to make it much more deadly, and we have to ask why. So I don't know whether it's going to be an epidemic or whether it's going to be a financial collapse or a terrorist attack, like maybe the one at 9/11, where at least five or at least six or seven of the terrorists that have been named by the FBI are alive and well over in the Middle East. I don't know whether it's going to be a nuclear attack. It could be any one of a number of things, but I believe we're heading into very, very difficult times, and you need to begin making your preparations financially, fiscally, food storage, and of course spiritually, for the difficult times that lie ahead. If you've not yet seen my talk on the financial tsunami, and you can get the talk, but you probably should get that with the syllabus as well. If you want to understand why we're in Iraq, you need to get my talk on Iraq, the Untold Story, which covers all of the wars of the 19th and 20th century, all of them contrived, all of them fought not for the reasons that our young men were told, but in an effort to bring about a new world order and a new world religion. And then, of course, we hope many of you will want to get my talk on the world revolution. We'll actually see the interview I did with Ambassador Dodd, Ambassador Smith, or Earl T. Smith, who was the American ambassador to Cuba at the time we turned Cuba over to Fidel Castro, knowing full well he was a communist. We hear a lot of talk about people who are guilty of war crimes. Saddam Hussein killed a lot of people. You realize that when Fidel Castro came in, he held show trials, and he killed 15,000 people who had supported the previous regime. He killed 15,000 people, and where are the calls for war crime trials for Fidel Castro? Why, he's a very good friend of David Rockefeller's. And certainly David Rockefeller's daughter is a very close friend. If you don't believe that, we carry David Rockefeller's memoirs at number 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And we'll be back in just a few moments. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. We need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and the views of our callers. And we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls unless we ask for them, because right now we have with us a very special guest, Andrew Skousen from World Affairs Brief. Andrew, how are you tonight?
Just fine, Dr. Stan. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's good to have you with us again. And tell us what are the latest issues covered in the World Affairs Brief that you'd like to talk about tonight?
Well, there's quite a few issues that have been going on lately. The entire issues surrounding the North Korea's missile test, as well as the Mexican election. And there's a great deal going on over in Israel right now. And if possible, I'd also like to talk about very interesting developments with a stealth attempt to try to incorporate the United States in a trilateral North American union with Canada, the United States, and Mexico, all as a single kind of European Union type body.
All right, fine. Well, let's see how far we can get for those subjects.
Yes.
So much information. Do you pick up? Where should we start?
Well,
let's
start with North Korea.
All right, go ahead.
I think that this is one of the most important topics to talk about, because some of the current confrontation issues are unique and different from previous history that we've seen with missile tests in North Korea. Specifically, it seems that North Korea's leader Kim Jong-il is trying to provoke a response from the United States.
That's exactly like President Ahmadinejad is trying to provoke a response from the United States in Iran. And none of this makes sense. I mean, why would you poke a stick at a rattlesnake? Or why would you poke a spear at a gorilla? I mean, he's going to strike back. So why are both the leaders of North Korea and Iran doing everything they can to provoke a confrontation with the United States? None of this really makes sense, does it?
It doesn't, except when I think you start to understand a little bit about the what's behind the decision of Kim Jong-il. He believes that China and Russia are backing him up completely. And in fact, to a great extent, they are. There's been some information that the U.S. was upset because they expected Beijing to stop the missile test. Apparently, they had secretly promised to do so and failed to follow through. So it appears that China is definitely playing along to North Korea's side rather than with the United States on these issues.
Well, I think everybody's forgotten that certainly during the Clinton years, we were giving massive amounts of humanitarian aid to this wicked, ruthless dictator who starved to death millions of his own people, and of course his father, and then of course the son who's in power today. And how long, of course, the American government continued that, I can't quite remember. Of course, we actually started building them a nuclear power plant, in fact, a very advanced, sophisticated nuclear power plant. We were doing everything we could to supply oil to keep this ruthless regime in power. It doesn't really make sense. And then, well, we'll be back in just a moment. Well, Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I was just commenting that so many things really don't make sense. I mean, certainly North Korea is a feudalistic system, a terrible, terrible society, and yet, of course, we've done everything we could to maintain that society, and when we stopped giving humanitarian aid to the North Koreans, without which they could not have maintained their military and the structure of their government, then our good friends in South Korea, which are totally under our domination, we have had our troops occupying South Korea since 1955, well, even before that, since the the end of the Second World War. We have our troops there, we dominate that country, they have their elections, but when you have your troops in a country, you control that country. So we allowed them then to continue supplying humanitarian aid for the ruthless and wicked dictator of North Korea right up until just this last week or so, when after the missile firings, the 6 or 7 missiles they put off, suddenly South Korea now is going to stop giving the humanitarian food aid to North Korea to keep them in power. None of this really makes sense. But you picked the story up there, Andrew.
I absolutely agree with you, and I think that it starts to make more sense when we realize that there is a future long-term goal of both the powers behind the scenes here on the American continent, as well as the powers over in Russia, China, and North Korea, to eventually attack the United States, and the powers that are behind the scenes control here in the States actually want that attack to occur to be able to eventually galvanize people's support behind a new world government, a global form of government, which will only happen when people are struck by the horrors of World War III and give up all of our sovereignty rights in the name of establishing a world government supposedly to create peace. Now, North Korea is a very important key point in this, both for the Americans and for Russia and China, because it is unstable enough to be a core igniting point of this. In order to have enough power and clout to actually ignite something like this, it does need a lot of support, and consequently Russia and China are giving it a great deal of support.
You know, I think it's amazing. Nobody ever asks where it is that North Korea gets the technology to build very sophisticated missiles. They're certainly not developing in a country that can't even feed itself. They're getting it from China. They got it from us.
That's right. Both indirectly by us giving it.
And of course, Andrew was just saying that, of course, that North Korea has gotten its sophisticated missile technology from Communist China. And Communist China got the sophisticated missile technology from the United States. Why would we do something so stupid? It is to give the technology to Communist China, that gives it to North Korea, that's now given it to Pakistan and to Iran and to Saudi Arabia, and beginning to get these long-range, very sophisticated missiles all throughout the Middle East. It's fueling a tinderbox that's just sitting there getting ready to erupt. So you pick up the story, Andrew.
I absolutely agree with what you're saying, Dr. Stan. I'd like to point out, to sort of contrast this with the situation that's happening in Iran. Iran thinks that it's kind of in the same position as North Korea, that it can sort of flaunt position as well with the U.S. But I believe that it is mistakenly doing so. I think that Iran is being set up by both by Russia and China, which secretly want the U.S. to overexert its power and to make more mistakes like what we've done with Iraq to antagonize the rest of the world. And they know that if we precipitate a preemptive strike against Iran, that it will create further hatred and dislike of the United States.
And of course, apparently our military has, Seymour Hersh wrote a recent article in the New Yorker magazine where he said he'd talked to a number of our key military people who spoke to him off the record and told him The military does not want either to attack Iran, militarily or simply by bombing. If we bomb them, we wouldn't be able to accomplish anything. If we attack the military, we would simply further demoralize the military. We would leave our soldiers who are in Iraq open to a counterattack. And we could simply precipitate a war in the Middle East that there's no way we could deal with. And the military is trying to tell the president, don't do it. And yet it would appear that George Bush, at least the people who control George Bush, have their own agenda. So pick the story up there, Andrew.
That's right. Well, to illustrate how North Korea, in this specific case, has been trying to sort of elicit a specific response or an overreaction by the United States, let's see a couple of interesting points about what has happened recently. First of all, Pyongyang put 6 missiles on launch pads nearly a week before launch. This of course, gave the U.S. plenty of notice about these missile pads. It gave us plenty of time to have our satellites orbit overhead and see what was going on, and gave us an obvious sign that North Korea was intending to make a big statement here. The U.S., of course, took the bait and launched a fairly heavy media campaign against the test launches, which is inconsistent with previous cases where it has always acted surprised. It's also interesting that even though North Korea has a long history of missile tests, this one was a little bit unique. First of all, 5 of the missiles that were fired were older Scud-type missiles, which are hardly advanced development missiles that North Korea needs to test to see how they will react and to see how they will control. Further, the 5 Scud missiles kind of were spread out in several different directions, which seemed to indicate that they were trying to provoke many of the nations. And of course, we know that Japan jumped on board with the U.S. and the UN and tried to get some sanctions imposed against North Korea. But also, North Korea launched one of its ICBMs, one of the Taiplodong missiles. I believe it was an ICBM-2 type missile, which exploded shortly after it took off. And the White House jumped at that opportunity to try to point out how this wasn't a real threat, how North Korea's offensive military technology was not a major threat to the U.S. And consequently, North Korea later on midweek launched another missile to sort of prove us wrong in that aspect. But it shows a great deal of bravado from the North Koreans. It shows that they aren't afraid to poke a stick at the U.S. and try to antagonize us in this way.
But of course, Andrew, that just doesn't make any sense. Yeah. Why would they want to try to antagonize the United States? It, up until this time, had been doing everything they could to support them by allowing the South Koreans to continue massive humanitarian aid and shipments to the North after we discontinued it a few years ago. So
yeah.
Why would they be doing that? And then, of course, you probably remember that President Bush said, well, of course, if that missile had been coming towards the United States, we probably could have shot it down. What do you mean we probably could have shot it down? I mean, you're not sure that our anti-ballistic missile systems work? Well, it's sort of like hitting a bullet with a bullet. And after all, we only have 6 interceptors. Now, China has probably at least 26 ICBMs. Russia probably has 5,000 of them. And we have 6 anti-ballistic missiles. That really doesn't make any sense unless nothing, as it appears to be, unless we do have other defenses that they're not telling the American people about, and I will tell you right now, we do. We have space-based lasers called the Nautilus system that's been operational for years, and we could have taken down all those 5,000 missiles, or most of them, but we can't let the American people know that. Because, of course, we've already stated that we will allow a nuclear attack on America and we will absorb the first strike. Why would you do anything that stupid unintentionally? Unless, of course, it's part of a much bigger plan. So pick up the story there, Andrew, because there's so many things that are going on today that if you analyze them from a rational point of view, they're not rational. If you understand that they're simply part of a much bigger plan, then it all begins to make sense.
That's right. Well, take a look at what is happening here. Similar to what happened when China received admittance to the world group that is allowed to have nuclear weapons, I forget what it's called. The North Korea is trying to get an agreement with the U.S. allowing them and in a way, sanctioning their buildup of nuclear weapons. Now, see, watch what happens now with this six-party talk that supposedly is all that the U.S. is trying to corner North Korea into. In fact, this absolutely plays into what North Korea wants. They know that the U.S. doesn't intend to attack them militarily. They can flaunt this power, expose themselves as a greater threat, and know that the U.S. will try to appease them and try to coordinate with them diplomatically, and thus strengthen their position here. If you look at what happened, for instance, during the Cuban Missile Crisis, Kennedy, I'm sure that you know, secretly made a deal with Cuba that they would cease their as strict of an embargo on the entire nation in return for Cuba giving up the missiles there and ceasing to threaten an attack on the U.S. and basically giving Cuba, kind of carte blanche.
And of course, we also agreed to take our missiles out of Turkey. So actually, of course, the Cuban Missile Crisis was a charade. It was staged to get us to pull our missiles out of Turkey and to give Cuba a promise that we would never allow another invasion of their country. And we would put down the Cuban patriots in this country and not allow them to try to depose Fidel Castro. Of course, the real reason was that we put Fidel Castro in power, knowing he was a communist. He was a very convenient enemy to rally the American people behind, but we can't let them know any of these things. We've got to make them think that Fidel Castro is the enemy. He's the best
That's
enemy
right.
that we possibly could have created.
That's right, and North Korea wants the same deal. It's basically an aggression pact, and North Korea wants this non-aggression pact from the U.S. in the same way. And Bush has been eager to say things that hint towards that and tend towards that, but Kim wants it formal and he wants it public. But obviously, given the U.S.'s position of trying to be strong against Iran's similar position, they can't really afford to publicly take or give this non-aggression pact.
But of course they could do it very secretly, as Henry Kissinger promised, of course, the Chinese communists, that we wouldn't mind if they took Vietnam. Just wait long enough so it doesn't look like we knew about it. Henry Kissinger literally gave Vietnam to the communists during the Vietnam War, and those figures that come out But we could never tell the American people that, nor the fact that I think this whole thing is jockeying to, as Andrew says, to certainly give the North Koreans exactly what they want, recognition but and help, but of course we won't tell the folks at home. Okay, Andrew, go ahead.
All right, well, a few things to wrap up this story with North Korea. One is that we have not seen a great deal of support from South Korea on this. South Korea has sort of increasingly become a thorn in the side of U.S. policy toward North Korea. South Korea is controlled by the URI party, which is a leftist party that is very sympathetic to Marxist ideals. And South Korea has increasingly engaged North Korea with massive amounts of aid and economic trade. They are considering token sanctions now against North Korea, especially now that a majority of South Koreans have shown recently how displeased they are with the ruling party's approach to North Korea with these recent missile tests. In fact, the Yuri Party chairman, Chung Dong-yong, had to resign this week under the same pressure of his previous position with North Korea. So we see what's going on here. The U.S. is trying to placate towards North Korea, sort of behind the scenes, and North Korea is flaunting its power and provoking this as an international incident. But frankly, I don't think that the six-party talks will lead anywhere. I believe that they're merely the vehicle, the star, the inevitable confrontation, which, like I said before, will come in the future. I don't think that World War III is close. But I do think that that North Korea will serve as a trigger for it, or at least a spark to encourage it along. But I don't think that we will see anything of major significance happen here with these latest missile tests. Any other remarks, Dr.
No, I think you covered it very well. I think that this will continue simmering on along, and I think it is, of course, is simply part of this overall world geopolitical system that is moving America, moving the world towards this worldwide nuclear confrontation.
I agree. All right, well, let's move on to one of the other hot spots in the world. I'll talk a little bit about what's happening in Israel. Now, I'd like to start this with a quick commentary about how what's going on now in Israel is a result of the pullout of Gaza that Israel engaged in the past 6 months. There was an article in an Israeli newspaper. Actually, it's kind of a left-wing newspaper. It's Haaretz. But some of what Bradley Burstyn says in this newspaper is very informative. He says that soon after IDF troops, Israel police and border police expelled the thousands of settler families from the Gaza Strip, and after Israeli bulldozers crushed...
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Andrew Skousen. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Andrew is talking now about what's going on over in Israel, and the fact that, of course, that he's quoting from a left-wing paper in Israel, saying that after the Israeli government had actually forced the 8,000 settlers out of Gaza and out of their homes in Gaza, and they're using, of course, bulldozers to destroy everything. So they're forcing these people to leave Gaza. They don't want to. They're forcing them to come back within this enclave, within this walled area that they're setting up there on the east coast of the Mediterranean. This very tiny state of Israel that they're establishing, they hope they can secure, and yet, of course, they've given up 90% of the land that they had just a few years ago, which doesn't make sense unless there's another agenda behind everything going on. But pick up the story there, Andrew.
Agreed, and I think one of the most important points to make with this is that Gaza Strip, in particular the Golan Heights, is a very important strategic location in Israel. It gives an altitude advantage to whoever controls this area, and seriously facilitates mortar and rocket attacks. And that's exactly what has happened. The Hamas rocket attacks are called Qassams. And this particular author writing in this newspaper says, after the IDF troops, the police, and the border police expelled the thousands of settler families from the Gaza Strip, and after Israeli bulldozers crushed their homes to rubble, armed Palestinian groups moved in to use the rubble for Qassam rocket launch sites. Among their targets, the Negev town of Sderot, home of Amir Peretz, one of Israel's strongest supporters of a Gaza withdrawal. Interestingly, even though this man's home has been the target of all these rocket attacks, he still hasn't repented of the fairly idiotic policy of withdrawing from the Gaza Strip. The leftist Kibbutzim near the Gaza Strip, traditionally among Israel's strongest supporters of the Palestinian independence, has increasingly come under rocket attacks. More than 500 Qassams have rocked Sderot alone since the disengagement, striking daycare centers, medical clinics, schools, a library, and many private homes. It's interesting to note that Israel's foremost globalist this is just to set up what the situation is here between Israel and some of the consequence of their pullout is now this increased level of antagonism by Hamas, which is being facilitated by their access.
I think what's so important is for our listeners to understand that every time the Israelis make a major concession, why, of course, instead of the Palestinians appreciating that, and I'm not talking about the average Palestinian, I'm talking about the people who are really in charge there, then, of course, there's even further pressure put on Israel. Israel has given up well over 90% of the land that it had. And there is no prospect of peace from this at all. And now, of course, they're using Gaza to be, of course, lobbing their missiles on and their rockets on into Israel. Of course, they're using their bases up in Lebanon to do basically the same thing. Israel is under increasing attack, and every time they make a concession, why, they lose more. And you would think that after a period of time, you know, if somebody slaps you in the face and you turn your other cheek and they slap that one, and then you turn back and they slap you again, and you ought to realize they're going to keep doing that and as long as you allow them to do it. And you would think that the people and the Israeli leaders would realize that they're not going to get any place by making concessions, and yet they continue making concessions, which once again doesn't make sense unless we are leading up to a major confrontation there in the Middle East. And all of this is being used as an excuse to justify a massive onslaught against the Palestinians. And many of the Palestinians are good people. Their leaders are not, but the Palestinians are good people. Most of them have left the area there. They realize something big is about to occur. And I really fear for the people over there that some terrible things are going to befall them as soon as all the settlers are off the West Bank. Go ahead, Andrew, pick the story up from there.
Well, I think that you're absolutely right. I think that many of the Palestinians are not of the same mentality as Hamas, but from what we've seen in history, there are people that can be riled up in groups to anger against people. Often I think unjustifiably so, and made to be used in these situations.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and as we sit here in the comfort of our homes here in the United States, why over in Israel, why you could often hear the sounds of the incoming rockets, and I believe that, of course, the Near East is a tinderbox ready to explode, and everything that the Israeli leaders are doing is wrong, so there has to be, these are not stupid people. Sharon was not stupid. So there has to be an agenda behind this, and what most people do not understand is the people who control Israel are not loyal to Israel. They are loyal to the globalist objective. And anybody who's gone over, of course, what Henry Kissinger talked about, and fortunately we have his notes, they've just recently been published, what he was saying to the Arabs 30 years ago was that one day Israel is going to be just a small little tiny nation that will not be of any trouble to anybody. Now, how could he know that 30 years ago that was going to happen today? But he did. So pick up the story there.
Well, I think that Israel is kind of in a difficult spot. Every time Israel does anything militarily, it has to be extremely careful, whereas whenever Hamas does something militarily, they can attack basically whoever they want, and there's practically no outrage by the international community. Contrast that with what happens any time Israel does something that harms a common Palestinian citizen or a civilian Palestinian. Anytime that Israel does something like this, it's blown out of proportion in the international media at large, and consequently, it's interesting to see what Israel has done recently in the name of trying to release the captured Israeli hostage. They bombed one of the power plants for Gaza and plunged all of Gaza into a blackout. Consequently, of course, there was a great deal of criticism from the media, and Israel ended up supplying a great deal of gas to supply schools and hospitals and with generators and fuel to be able to
hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment with Andrew. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Andrew is simply saying that when the Israelis bombed the generators in the Palestinian area in reprisal for the Palestinians having kidnapped an Israeli soldier, why, then, of course, there's a world outrage because, of course, there's no electricity, so then Israel has to supply gasoline and diesel to the generators in the various emergency situations in the hospitals in the Palestinian area to make for the fact that they bombed the area. Now, I mean, basically, they bombed, of course, to say to the Palestinians, give us our man back or we're just going to wipe you off. You know, we're going to destroy the infrastructure of society. And then when Israel does what might be considered logical, immediately they're the bad guys. So go ahead, pick the story up there.
That's right. And some of the other tactics that they used were also decried by the international media, which included that this... The current Olmert/Kadena government that is currently in power in Israel arrested dozens of lawmakers and ministers from the ruling Palestinian party, Hamas, which sort of violates the traditional immunity that elected government officials have always enjoyed against direct assault or arrest. This, in the opinion of us here at World Affairs Brief, is an improper tenet of law. We actually think that it's very important to go after the leaders of a group rather than after the poor soldier who was just following the direction and mandate of these leaders. So we believe that it is the most important thing to do our best to attack a leader if he is causing the antagonism against our country. So Israel has actually been making a few of these moves, and it is getting increasingly criticized in the media here. In fact, Israel has even threatened to attack Hamas leaders in Damascus. Syria, of course, plays host to the leadership of many terrorist organizations, and Israel even went so far as to send several jets to overfly Syrian airspace in Damascus. But it's not clear if any wider escalation is going to come of this. We don't think that Syria is going to jump into Syria just yet. But there's an interesting article that comes out of Debka.com, which always offers a great of insight into the situation in Israel.
Now, of course, your dad has always said that Debka.com was basically a sort of a front for the Mossad. In other words, it's a front for Israeli intelligence appearing on the Internet, giving you information that may or may not be accurate, but it's always interesting, and it seems to represent many times, have inside information as to Israel's real purpose and goals and objectives. So what did the Debka article say?
Very good point, Pakistan. Thanks for jumping in there. It says, the Israeli captain approved no official operational plans, but rather the outer limits of such plans. The Israeli Air Force has long been bombing vacant land and empty buildings with little effect. No change is indicated, no takeover in territory was outlined in this.
In other words, it sounds like it's a lot of show here. They're bombing empty buildings. Why would you bomb empty buildings other than to try to give the perception you're doing something?
That's right.
And so much of what's going on is all illusion and delusion. It's symbolism over substance. It's rhetoric over reality until people understand that so much of what goes on is simply to convince the people that there's this conflict going on there.
That's right. And it is truly a make-believe offensive. And it has had several consequences. One, of course, the kidnapped Israeli soldier, Gideon Shalit, is out of reach of the IDF unless they can somehow bar him and create a surprise rescue assault. Two, of course, Hamas is stepping up its efforts to kidnap more Israelis, especially servicemen and civilians. Just as a side note here, we think that it's important that the Israeli government does not give in to exchanging terrorist leaders with this captured soldier, since that would only encourage more kidnapping.
But of course, the thing is that they will say that, and then of course they'll make a secret deal that maybe a month from now, while they'll let go a lot of the prisoners they're holding. So they say one thing, but they make secret deals behind the scenes. It's sort of like, remember Ronald Reagan, we will never, of course, negotiate with terrorists. And then they set out to negotiate with the terrorists. So they said one thing for the folks, the public, and then they did another.
It's absolutely true. And the people who are charged in Israel, of course, have to play a great deal to put on this masquerade of being anti-terrorist to be able to appease all of the rest of the Israelis and hopefully continue to get elected, which is why all of these mock incursions continue to go on. Some effects of this are that the Palestinians are in the midst of a new terror offensive from the West Bank aimed at bringing suicide bombers into massacres. In fact, there were several failed attempts just this week. In Jenin, Israeli troops defused two large car bombs for one of the Israeli cities that was more central. And this was followed by the interception of a Palestinian wearing a bomb vest on his way to an industrial zone north of Tel Aviv.
And because, you know, the whole thing, you know, we carry a book. It was written some years ago. It's called The Devil's Game. And it points out that Israel and the United States had actually participated in financing Hamas, setting up this enemy organization. People have forgotten that during the Bosnian War, during the Clinton administration, the Bosnians were backed by Al-Qaeda. And who were we backing? We were backing Al-Qaeda. People have forgotten that in Kosovo, the Kosovo Liberation Army was backed by Al-Qaeda, and we were backing the Kosovo Liberation Army. So nothing is as it appears to be until you understand that we got this certain perception of what's going on. And yet, of course, we have, you know, we have been funding the terrorist organizations. Saudi Arabia funds the Hamas. Of course, Pakistan funds the Hamas. And we certainly funded Pakistan. So why would we be doing anything this stupid unintentionally? It really doesn't make sense unless it's all sort of a gigantic charade and all these people are being killed for nothing.
It's true. It's true. My father, who has been to Israel, writes a commentary about what is going on here. He says, from my experience in Israel, I don't believe the globalist-controlled Israeli government ever intends to really eliminate terrorism in Gaza or the occupied territories. Having continual conflict is necessary to force Israel into the New World Order net that is forming around it. If there is a widening of the offensive in Gaza, it will still stop short of real victory over the forces that infest this now safe haven for Arab radicals, carved out Ariel Sharon and his Kadima labor cohort. While American Christians rejoice when they see any military action that promises to grant Israel her traditional quote-unquote land of promise, they should not be so easily deceived. This is indeed all for show. The conflict will only get worse, and the Israeli government will continue to weaken its own strategic position. Just as you said, every time it gives up concessions to peace, it is only strengthening the position against Israel.
Because in a similar manner, we build up our own enemies throughout the world. We're doing everything we can to build up the Chinese communists, who are a potential enemy, and the Russians, who are a potential enemy. And, you know, we keep Fidel Castro in power. Fidel Castro's very close friend is Hugo Chavez. Hugo Chavez's very close friend is President Ahmadinejad over there in Iran. And of course, if we didn't have all these enemies, how could we rally the people behind the government? And, you know, I believe that there will be a coming war, and I believe it's all going to be staged for one purpose, and your dad has it exactly right. The purpose of the coming war is to bring us into the New World Order, exactly as the purpose of all the things that are going on over in Israel today. The conflict between the Israelis and the Pakistanis is to wear the Israelis down to the point where they'll give up everything just for peace, and they'll give up their freedom and their sovereignty, exactly as they want the American people to do. And, of course, we're doing the same thing over in Iraq. We're not trying to win the war. We're not trying to put enough people over there and enough troops over there. We're not trying to cut off the funding to the insurgents. We're not trying to seal the borders. We're not doing everything correctly. And, of course, instead of trying to build up the Iraqi army, you know, the new army that we're forming, which, of course, we had to destroy the old army before we could then build up a new army. And are we giving them adequate supplies? No. Are we giving them Hummers and modern warfare things? No, we're giving them the World War II Russian tanks to use that there are no supplies for. You know, they're not getting adequate food or munitions or weapons. If we're trying to get them to take the place of the American Army, why don't we get them properly trained and give them the adequate supplies? Because if we did that, how could we justify staying? So, go ahead. I mean, we need to get people to understand, you know, basically, Andrew, that everything is a charade. Only an awful lot of people are dying unnecessarily.
That's right. And I think that people will only start to realize that when they stop listening to what the government says and start to watch what the government does. And increasingly, it's important to have a wide range of news sources to be able to have a correct idea of what is actually going on out there, to be able to see what the government is actually doing.
And that's why I think what your dad does with the World Affairs Brief is so vitally important. I want you to tell our listeners how they can get the World Affairs Brief and how they can... I had a woman call this weekend. I said that she... I said subscribed, and then her subscription has run out. She's not sure how to go about. She's been trying to contact somebody to get it renewed. So how can people either renew their subscriptions or get a subscription to World Affairs Brief?
Certainly. I think that the best way for people to do either one of those is to log on to our website, which is at www.worldaffairsbrief.com, one word, worldaffairsbrief.com, or they can call toll-free 1-877-518-5888. Once again, that's toll-free 1-877-518-5888. And that gives them the opportunity to sign up for the brief. They can also request a free copy of the brief to be sent to them. And if they log onto our website, of course, they can find links.
All right. Well, let's go to Leslie, who's been waiting patiently here. Leslie in Virginia. Leslie, did you have a question for our guest?
Yes, and I want you to say your guest or World Affairs Brief, there's none better. And I'm just sorry this isn't carried on a major network, these questions that you're asking, because the word is accountability. I'm confused. Maybe your guest can help me. As you know, Dr. Stan, the Bilderberger meeting was held June 7th or 8th, in that time frame. And President Roosevelt told us nothing in politics happens by accident. And your guest knows that Eva Gildy was there, and he's the head of the coordination strategy for OLMRT, and the Ziad Ammar, he's the president of the Palestinian Council of Foreign Relations. And this is where you come in, Dr. Stan. To me, it was a clear signal for the go-ahead because, from my understanding, the Bilderbergers, the Europeans, I don't know how they worded this, but basically they wouldn't fight, they implied, war for Israel. And they would have no part of the invasion of Iran. You know, that's sending signals out, and they're giving them the green light. I mean, there are strong implications in this. But what is so interesting, Dr. Stan, as you know, our dollar is in serious, serious trouble.
Did you have a question at all for our guest?
Right. I hate to say this. I'll have the courage to say this. The international bankers, in my opinion, is running the entire show and is using Israel for everything it's worth.
Okay. Okay, you have a question.
And that's my fear. And does he agree with me on this? Because the Bilderbergers gave them a clear sign to go for it.
To go for what?
They gave them the green light. I'm talking about the Palestinians. With this being said to them, the European Bilderbergers saying it to these two gentlemen. So they went back.
Saying what to the two gentlemen, Leslie?
They told them, or they implied that the United States, that they told the United States and these two gentlemen that I just mentioned, that the European Bilderbergers basically want no involvement with an invasion of Iran, and also they would not help Israel in case of a confrontation.
All right, fine. Well, I think that is very, very clear. But the question is, what are the real powers behind this? Because I don't think the Bilderbergers are the total top.
Because
they're close to
money.
It, but they're not the
biggest.
We've got to run, Leslie, because we're almost out of time.
Okay, our dollar is dropping significantly.
Okay.
That's why.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye. Okay. All right. Do you have any thoughts at all upon what Leslie was saying there, one way or the other?
Just to see about the meeting of the Bilderbergers. Although it is clear that they are have a great deal of power, and it is interesting to watch what happens there, I don't believe that the that the true people that are behind the scenes rarely show up at these situations. It's true that these people are higher up, but I don't believe that the true people that are controlling behind the scenes actually attend these noteworthy groups. It's, the secrecy is too high.
And I think what Andrew is saying is that there are forces, people are far more powerful than the Bilderbergers out there. There is a secret group that runs the world. And, of course, you're never going to know when they have a meeting. I think the Bilderbergers represent a lot of wealth and a lot of power. But they are not the apex of what's going on any more than the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations. They are all power bases, but they are simply fronts for the real power elite. In my estimation, that runs the world, and behind them, and this is what, of course, everybody misses, are powerful spiritual forces. Because there really is another dimension. There really are forces behind the scenes that are directing the course of world events. The Bilderbergers have their plan. The communists have their plan. But Lucifer has a plan. Then so does God. We'll be back in just a moment here to wrap up this evening's program. Well, Andrew, why don't you go ahead and we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
All right. Well, let me quote briefly from an article by Paul Craig Roberts, who talked about the high price of American gullibility. I think that a lot of the things that he says sum up a lot of the reasons why so many of these problems are occurring in the United States right now. He says, what explains the gullibility of Americans? A gullibility that has mired the U.S. in disastrous wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, that promises war with Iran, North Korea, and a variety of other targets. Part of the explanation is that millions of conservatives are thrilled at the opportunity to display their patriotism and to show their support for their country. Bush's rhetoric is perfectly designed to appeal to this desire. You are with us or against us, he says, which elicits a blind and unquestioning response from people determined to wear the patriotism on their sleeve. Another part of the explanation is that emotional appeals have grown stronger as the ability of educated people to differentiate fact from rhetoric declines. The Bush administration blamed 9/11 on foreign intelligence failures, yet the administration has convinced about half of the public that mass surveillance of American citizens is the solution. Many Americans and a blind eye to the administration's illegal and unconstitutional spying on the grounds that they themselves are doing nothing wrong. Therefore, we have nothing to fear. If this is the case, why did our founding fathers bother to write the Constitution? If the executive branch is trusted not to abuse power, why did Congress pass legislation establishing a panel of federal judges, which of course has been ignored by the Bush administration, to oversee surveillance? If President Bush can decide that he can ignore statutory law, how does he differ from a dictator? In short, if people are getting to the point where they are dumbed down such that they fail to see the importance of what the Constitution was set up in our country to do, which was to put restraints on what government could do, then the Constitution is lifeless and takes on no power. I think it is absolutely critical that we do our best to keep the citizens of the United States as educated as possible about what the crucial issues are.
Well, that's what you and your dad are doing, and Andrew, we're out of time. I want to thank you so very much for being our guest this evening. Andrew was quoting from an article by Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, formerly Assistant Secretary of the Treasury, certainly one of my favorite commentators. God bless, and thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Dr. Sands. Thank you.
Good night. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Andrew Skousen from World Affairs Brief. And he certainly does a great job of helping us to crystallize these ideas and try to explain the unexplainable. if you understand that nothing really makes sense when you look at it, the response of the Israelis, the response of course, Hamas, in fact, the exit polls showed that Fatah actually won that election. But see, when they got through counting the votes, why, Hamas had won, and nobody asked, well, why did the exit polls show that Fatah had won? And I think the whole thing is rigged. I think that most things that are going on are rigged today. I think that so many of the so-called democratic elections, whether it be the election of Nelson Mandela in South Africa, which we staged, the election of Mugabe in Zimbabwe, which we staged, we are bringing dictators to power all throughout the world. Oh, people say Mandela wasn't a dictator. Well, no, but when he came to power, you know, there were all the communists from all over the world, and Hillary Clinton were there, of course, to congratulate Nelson Mandela, who is a lifelong communist. And in fact, the reason he was imprisoned was because he was a terrorist and he refused to renounce terrorism. And the only reason he got out of prison was because of the influence of the American government. And we supervised the election. We printed up 80 million ballots for 40 million people. There were all sorts of irregularities in the election. It didn't matter. We put people into power. We want in power. We brought Mossadegh to we deposed the democratically elected government of Iran in 1953, a man named President Mossadegh, and we kept him locked up throughout the rest of his life. He was democratically elected. And we put the Shah of Iran in power. Then we deposed the Shah of Iran in 1979, and we brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power. And now we are in the process of trying to depose his government. We have special forces and Mossad troops operating openly in at least three or four of the Iranian provinces today. You're not hearing that. We're at war with Iran. We have our troops operating in there. We're funding the opposition to the existing government. We're beaming all sorts of propaganda in to Iran. We may not have invaded yet. We may not have dropped any bombs. But if we have our forces operating there, our special forces units, this is an act of war. But we are doing this throughout the entire world. We are bringing to power the governments we want. If you have not read the book Confessions of an Economic Hitman by Joseph Perkins, who is part of the group that runs the world, or here are four tape sets with Mr. Perkins called The Economic Hitman. You really need to get the interviews with Mr. Perkins. You need to read his book to see how the world really works and how, of course, when we did not succeed, to bring pressure pair, where we bring the CIA and the assassins in, he called them the jackals, and we simply kill the leaders of the country, and how often it is that the leaders of countries have a mysterious plane crash or helicopter crash or assassination attempt, and then we replace them with somebody who's reliable. Would our government do that? And I would like to suggest that we really would, because there are evil and wicked people out there. There is a component within our society that is based upon evil. At one time, they were certainly in a minority. Today, they're in the majority. You need to get our pamphlets on the occult hierarchy. That's the pamphlets on the occult hierarchy. You need to get my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, and Chris Ted Flynn's wonderful book, The Hope of the Wicked. You need to get my interviews with Johanna Michelson, a four-tape set called The Supernatural. You need to get Constance Cumby's book, The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow, which will introduce you to the world of occultism, to the other dimension. And then, of course, our four tape sets on Aleister Crowley and his friends. Probably one of the best things we have are the videos. They sold their souls for rock and roll. They sold their souls for rock and roll. The 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We do hope many of you will support Radio Liberty. Please pray for revival and pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.